Morning show time, 7:06. Good morning. It's Dan Gaffney. And on the phone with me is a parent of a child in the Indian River School District, the John M. Clayton Elementary School. Christina Wright is here. Good morning, Christina. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We're going to try and let our listeners know what happened to your son and talk about it a little bit. I know you're a little nervous. You say you have some sort of prepared remarks, but
I do.
If you could just get into it and just get us up to speed here. What happened with your son? Yeah, I understand he was assaulted twice.
Yes, he was assaulted two different times by the same offender. He is part of a hybrid program. The offender.
What is the High Roads program?
So the High Roads program is a program. Let's see, I have it right here. Okay. This is right off of their website. It is diversity and compassionately bridges the gap in education for students who present with a range of unique challenges. It says our staff and the roadmap of our students' individualized education, their IEP, to guide and track the academic and behavioral progress of the students. Hmm. So these students should have one-on-ones. When my son was attacked the first time, he had went to his computer teacher and said, "Hey, he's poking me." And 20 minutes later, he was pushed, shoved, and punched with two one-on-ones in the classroom who did not see or intervene.
In other words, these one-on-ones, this happened with other multiple adults in the room.
Yes, yes, that is correct. And it happened for a second time on 12/7, and three High Road students attacked my son blindly with no one-on-ones.
Okay.
There was no one-on-one from the second.
And when you say three of these High Road students attacked your son, that was the same offender plus two more?
Yes, that is correct.
Now, you went to the administration or the school after the first attack, did you?
I did, and it was totally downplayed. It was considered boys being boys. And it was, per John M. Clayton, it was unsubstantiated. Since then, we had to fight extremely hard for it to be changed, and it has been changed to an assault three. So this one offender has two assault threes, and he is still present at John M. Clayton, while my son is not.
After the second attack, you upped your concern here and wanted to make sure they did something, right?
That is correct. And they have not.
Well, how did this come about that the offenders are still in the classroom, but your son is not? How did that come about?
Well, they refused to put the offender in a different school or location. And I don't feel safe for my son to attend. He does not feel safe to attend JMC. I guess under this program, you know, it's a government funded program, and they don't have a place for this child. I am pushing for more resources for the teachers to be better prepared for these unpredictable behaviors at any given moment. And JMC never educated the parents of what they're housing under the roof. I think that if we were educated as parents and guardians, we could better prepare our children, give them survival skills so they can survive such violent attacks at any given moment.
Tell me what they did to your son again. Push, punch, and do you know why they picked your son to...
Per the JMC is because he was small. He's a smaller kid. And I have to say, on the second attack, they should have been separated, and they put my son in the back corner with no escape route. My son was hit blindly, and he was sitting right next to him after the second attack, 11 days after. There was extreme negligence on JMC's part.
In other words, they put the kid that went after your son, they put him right next to him.
Exactly, in the back corner of the room. If the teacher had not been in that room, Lord knows what we would be talking about this morning.
So the High Roads program, this is kind of a special, these are difficult.
I'm getting educated myself.
Yeah, how do you describe the high, difficult, or you describe it as difficult, behavioral, or special needs kind of thing?
Huh? Yes, special needs. Like, I guess their brains aren't wired properly, and they try to integrate these children in with the typical children to give them opportunities. I've heard that that word multiple times, opportunities, and I'm all about giving all children the opportunity of an education, but they're also giving opportunities for these children to attack our innocent children. So if they are going to house these programs, they really need to have the resources, trained staff to prevent these incidents from happening, and they need to educate the parents what we're subjecting our innocent children to. We need to speak about what that looks like when your child is pinned in the back of the room. How is your child going to survive? They truly need to educate us, and we need to educate our innocent children because, unfortunately, violence does go on, and it's going to continue to go on.
From inside the school, there's a texter that works in the Indian River District and often texts in from the inside. I'm just going to read this comment to you.
Yeah, please do.
Here is the secret to dealing with the Indian River School District. Number one, the superintendent is not in charge. The district is run by Renee Jerns and Judy Brittingham. They're the ones making the decisions. Number two, threaten a lawsuit. They will give you anything you want. Number three, change your student's identity to a minority group. The smaller, the better. They will then be worried about going over the quota of referrals for that group. It makes you untouchable.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, I tell you, there was a lot of finger pointing, and there's no accountability and ownership throughout this process, which really made it extremely difficult to understand. You know, we were referred back to the Indian River School District website, which is the lack of resources. So what I would like to tell the listeners, if they could, there's going to be a board meeting on February 27th at 7 p.m. at Sussex Central High School. I would really like to unite in partnership. We need massive change in our school systems. It's broken, and it's on a national level. I've had many families reach out to me about similar incidents, which nothing was done. But something has to be done. We need to educate, and we need to protect our innocent children. As we all know, the six-year-old in Newport News, Virginia, brought a gun and shot his teacher. We shouldn't have to wait for something that tragic to happen when in our community we are housing these programs without the resources, the staff, and the education to our families.
Have you had the opportunity to reach out to any board member or have a discussion with any?
Oh, man. So on 123, I went for my first board meeting, which, you know, again, maybe I should have attended more. That's why I want to put that out there, too. Parents, we got to get more involved. I have spoken to Dr. Owens, Miss Blannard, Miss Booth, Ronnie Layfield, the DSB. It's just been a whirlwind. Yes, I have reached out to many, the Department of Education, Mr. Brian Moore. And you really, I get left chasing, you know, going in circles. Really, nobody wants to guide you through this. You're kind of alone. That's why I reached out to you. And I understand getting a lawyer, but I feel that as a victim's parents, we shouldn't have to jump through so many hurdles to get what is right.
It seems like a no-brainer to me. If you have a child who is, if there is a child who is assaulting other people, they need to be taken out of the classroom. How hard is
that? Thank you.
How hard is that?
Well, what they want to do is they want to push my son out of the school because I don't feel comfortable having my son go back to JMC. The staff members, you know, they have failed my son twice now, and I know that no one can guarantee me his safety, but there has been too much swept under the rug. You know, it took, the first incident happened on 11/23. On 1/13, we were told for the first time that there were three adults in the room. That's how long and drawn out this whole circus has been.
And let me backtrack here. Were the police involved at all? You mentioned
Yes. The second attack, we figured, hey, this isn't boys being boys. Yes, the resource officer there at Indian River High School got involved, and he pretty much said it was like a null and void because due to the offender's age, because there was three offenders at that time. They were 9 and 10. In the state of Delaware, they have to be 12 years of age. There was an investigation done, and his sergeant was also involved, because I just have to put this on there. It's just the multitude of what we have been up against. The DSP, when I was face-to-face with them, I said, well, is this a hate crime? Because we didn't know why my son was being targeted. And the sergeant said, I'd be careful slinging that term. So I asked him what his definition was, and he couldn't tell me. He says, I'll get it for you. And he's been with DSP for 15 years. And then I had an opportunity to see his sergeant face to face, and I asked her what a hate crime was, and she did not give me a definition. Actually, Ms. Booth read it from a Google search.
Have you heard from any? You've kind of went public with this. Have you heard from other parents with similar problems?
Oh yes, I had one mother reach out that her daughter was being bullied, and it was swept under the rug, and they actually had to uproot her daughter to a different school.
From the same? Was this at the same school or a different district?
It was a different school, but it was in the same district.
Here's someone who says on the text line, we have a text line here, High Roads program replaced the Carver School. It sucks, someone says.
We have big problems in our schools, and we're not educated as parents and guardians. We never knew anything about the High Road program during the first incident. If we were told about this program, it would have shed some light to how we would have responded. The first time we were taking the lead the school was taking the lead, and we were following it as boys being boys, and we were hoping that was the case. But 11 days later, we found out that is not the case. And to know that there was no one-on-ones due to miscommunication, maybe not enough staff. So this is a huge problem, and it's bigger than the High Roads program. It's about resources and funding and teachers' pay, and it's huge. But I want to put it out there, we need to stand together for change.
Someone says, why not put the troublemakers in a separate facility? Why intermingle them with the good students that want to learn? This doesn't make any sense. I think it's done because legally got shut down.
Less invasive. Right. Yeah, well, they want the less invasive, they want to put them in an environment, I guess, to give them opportunity to prove themselves. But when a child proves themselves over and over with violent attacks, something must be done. He should be part of a homebound program. He should be the one, not my son, the innocent victim.
Is that where your son is now, some sort of homebound program?
Yes. Yes, because I'm not allowing him to go to JMC as of right now.
But they're providing the schooling, or what happens?
Yes. So? Yes, actually, that has not started yet due to the limited resources as well. You got scheduling conflicts with the teachers. You know, they teach all day. But yes. But this, and that was another kicker. I was reading through the policies and procedures. This homebound program should have been offered to the offender, because it states right in their policy that if a child is can't be safe environment or a harm to others, so he should be.
Yeah, why don't they put that kid in a homebound program?
Yes, yes, that's my
question. Son's just going to school and getting beaten up. Why does he have to go homebound? Or was that your decision?
Well, I made him homebound because I don't trust, as long as that the offender is underneath JMC, I don't trust for my son's safety, and he doesn't either. And you know, the saddest thing as well is, you know, this happened in front of his friends and classmates. They have witnessed these horrific attacks, and they see the offender walking amongst them in the hallways while they see my son's empty seat. which breaks my heart. And I just want to know, what kind of message are we sending to these children that you can attack someone and still get away with it? Like, our system is so, so damaged. It's so damaged.
I would agree with that. Christina Wright, mm-hmm. where do you go from here? You mentioned parents getting involved in your involvement. What do you plan to do next?
Keep on fighting for what's right. And it's going to take years for change, but we need some change in our systems. Educate, and protect our innocent children. I feel like there should be a program that gives them survival skills, because this is real. Teachers get, and you know, we need to help protect our teachers. These teachers are getting bruises and broken bones, and it's bad.
Well, good luck. Thanks for shedding light and opening our eyes to this. A lot of people might be very surprised by what you just said, and I do thank you for your call today, okay?
Yes, thank you so much.
Stay in touch. Christina Wright, how do you, as a parent or other person in the community, what's your take on that? What do you think about what you just heard? We have a free and open exchange of ideas and of opinions. My number is 302-839-1059.
Hey, Dan, Eric Buxton calling from up 16th Senate District.
Hey, State Senator, how are you? Eric Buxton. Yeah, good to hear you.
I am well. I didn't know if you'd moved on from the topic of restorative justice, but if you have a minute, I'd like to share a thought or two.
Yeah, let me bring our listeners up to speed. 1 hour ago, we spoke with a mother. Her name was Christina Wright, about an assault of her child in an elementary, J.M. Clayton Elementary School in the Indian River District. And students that assaulted her son not once but twice in different days are on a program called High Roads, where, you know, the kind of mainstream classroom for some students with some issues. And it ends up her son gets is in a home education program, but the offenders are still in the classroom. And someone brought up, and it's brought up more than once, the idea of restorative justice, which is something that's being practiced in our schools. I think you're on the education committee, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe you can explain what that is and then your thoughts. What is restorative justice anyway? What is it?
Sure, Dan. And a disclaimer, I am not aware of the particulars of the case in there.
Absolutely.
You mentioned in Indian River.
Sure.
I do have 30 years in the classroom. I just retired 2 years ago. About the 2 years prior to that, restorative praxis started to come onto the scene. And these are all my thoughts, not basing them on other thing other than my experience. But my experience is this. In, I think, 2017, there was a bill passed in the General Assembly, a Senate bill, I think 85. And what it did was, it, in essence, again, just off of memory, started requiring data to be produced by the school districts on different forms of discipline. Mm-hmm. And if you exceeded certain levels, then you would essentially, I'm going to fast track it, be put on some sort of improvement plan. The district would.
Yep.
So the way you avoid the improvement plan is you have to keep the numbers low. The best way to do that is this restorative praxis model, where instead of handing out discipline, now listen, we can all agree, like we can with a lot of things, that a reform measure can be effective, but not one that just throws the baby out with the bathwater, which essentially what we're doing here is we are creating a system. We have, where the idea is that if you, in essence, get the individual, the child many times, to kind of calm down, sit at a table, acknowledge what they did wrong, you can inject them back into the classroom, and there doesn't have to be a disciplinary act.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a general, broad explanation for what it is. I know your listeners don't want to get into the weeds about the technical aspects of it, but in short, the school districts, through no fault of their own, are incentivized to manage the data or tracking of discipline And the best way to do that is when you have students who are late for class, or if you have students who violate the dress code, and the only form of punishment is detention, and then they won't serve the detention. And so then you're left with a suspension, but you can't do a suspension because they're ineffective. Then what's left? You have to go to a different type of disciplinary form. You stop enforcing strict tardiness. You stop enforcing strict dress codes. You start calling a physical confrontation more of a just a misunderstanding. Do all those things so that you don't have to drive the data numbers up.
Right.
I probably ought to stop there again. When the experts in the room are going to call and go, this, that, and the other, I would love to have a very structured conversation with them. But in essence, that's what's going on. And the proof's in the pudding, because these stories are rampant throughout all of our public school districts. You can just ask classroom teachers. They'll verify.
Well, that's what I've been hearing, you know, and some of them have referenced this and how it's changed the classroom. And I guess administrators of the school are basically, it sounds like, incentivized to basically fudge the numbers, you know, instead of having high numbers of discipline, let's just change the definition of what causes discipline and keep the numbers low.
It is, it, in fairness to them, and in fairness to the folks who may embrace restorative practices, it can be a part of getting a child to better understand how to manage themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always said this, good teachers have always had restorative practices in their classroom. They've always worked on getting the child to manage themselves better. When a teacher has to take the step of asking a child or telling the child they're being removed or asking the administration to do that, at that point, there has to be discipline. There can't be restored. It needs to be, you've done this, you've earned this, we need to suffer the consequences, and then we can work on restoring yourself back in. They kind of skip that, and they have to, because again, the states have weaponized it to say, if you, you guys are wrong. You're wrong for your disciplinary structure, and we're going to penalize you if you don't figure it out. So what happens? They run the reports down. The problems go up, but the data goes down, and that's exactly what the states are done through this legislation, in my opinion.
Right. And other parents who have kids that just want to learn and stay out of trouble are left with kids with that are discipline problems right in the class with them, which is disruptive to everyone and a very hard on the teaching, I would imagine.
It does two things. Well, it does a couple of things, but the state's very good at growing problems through well-intended acts, and that's exactly what this is. When you have two or three children who have legitimate challenges with managing themselves in the classroom, and you don't help them to challenge to manage their outcomes through firm, committed, structured, you know, acts, then you grow the problem. You have the children next to them who don't fit that category and have a decision to make. Do I want to handle my business, or do I want to get the reward that this other folk got, this other child got, by being disruptive, being asked to leave, you know, being brought back into the classroom, kind of giving some street cred? These are hard topics to talk about, but listen, here's what I know. And it doesn't agree with me. Go talk to the classroom teachers. Don't take it from my word. Take it on the folks that are inside those four walls. They will tell you they love their children, but we are getting it wrong.
The issue that you just talked about was one of the parent that, I know you're not commenting on a specific story, but the parent that talked to us earlier mentioned a similar thing in real life. She says the students in that classroom where my elementary son were, they saw and witnessed a child beat my kid, and then he's still walking around in class, and the victim is out of the school. And that's what they see, as you just touched on. You know, it's
tough, because you're in a world where we're talking about improvement plans and making the classrooms more effective in learning. I don't know if most of the folks listening have taught in a classroom, but they probably coached a little league team or soccer team. Could you imagine 30 kids? Where you have four or five who completely disrupt each practice. They're good kids, love them to death, but they are disrupting the practices. And you have six or seven other ones that aren't very good yet. But you, as a coach, are being judged on keeping everybody in the practice, and everybody has to play and we're going to judge you on your record. And you're going to play against private teams that don't have the same rules. The system is nuts.
Whoa. Yeah, that's tough. That's a good way of looking at it. So what's the hope here? Can this be fixed, and what should people do, and what can you do, or what do you suggest?
What we've got to do is come to a more common-sense approach that while we, every child that walks through that school, that classroom door, we want to learn, and we want to have a positive experience. But the reality is not everybody is going to benefit from the same, I guess we'll call it traditional classroom. You're just not. In order for the classroom teacher to keep the train moving, we're going to have to recognize that some of the old systems where children or students who are not able to function well in a normal traditional classroom, they're not going to be able to go back. At least until they learn how to handle their business, not because we don't care about them, but because we care about all the children, and the other ones have to be able to continue to move forward. That's a tough pill to swallow, but if we're going to survive as a country, you better get after it. We better recognize that.
Yeah. State Senator Eric Buxton is in the 16th Senate, just north of the Sussex line in DeKalb County. It's great to have you there, and long record of real life work in the classroom as well. So good luck, and thanks for explaining that to us. Okay,
no worries. Again, I'm not perfect in my explanation. I understand there'll be differences of opinion. I'd welcome the conversation. Thank you.
All right, Eric Buxton, Delaware 105.9.